What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Norma Foley is the Minister for Education. She'll be with me shortly after 5 o'clock. And we're going to talk a little bit about this body of work that has been carried out, this research in her department, commissioned by her in fairness, on bullying, the first of 5 annual reports on bullying in the classroom. And it's kind of too dense and too broad to go through all of the detail in it, but some of the stuff stands out. A third of post-primary school students, so a third of secondary school students, feeling unwelcome at times in their school. Now, there's about 400,000 secondary school students in this country. So that's 130,000 of them. It is an immense figure. We're going to talk to her about that and about the feeling that many of those students have that they can't talk, or they're reticent to talk, or they're reluctant to talk to a teacher because they doubt the teacher's ability to deal with the problem correctly. Sean Fallon is with me, is on campaign on this issue, and Chris Sherlock as well, the broadcaster and a victim of bullying in the classroom. You're both very, very welcome, gentlemen. Chris, just to give people a real sense of how important an issue this is, why this research is important and why something has to happen, tell us a little bit about your own story.
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it has to happen for many reasons, because we're losing a lot of lives to bullying. Bullying happens in many shapes and forms, unfortunately. And with social media now, it was a bit different for me because I could actually shut it out at the time. You know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram weren't things that were on trend. But for me, it happened during the school hours, and it was enough. And that nearly set me over the edge, because I was a first year student trying to find my feet, getting used to subjects, teachers and so on. And within the very first few days of starting there, I was subject to verbal bullying first, where it all started, calling names and so on. And I thought, well, if I say nothing to the bullies or say nothing about the bullying going on, they might just get bored and move on. And in that particular moment, straight away, I just wanted them to move on as quick as possible and, you know, let them pick on somebody else. And in reality now, with what I faced in terms of being physically bullied too, I wouldn't wish it on anybody, because it's absolute torture and it stays with you for a long, long time.
One of the findings, like I say, of this research is the reluctance of students like yourself in that situation to actually talk to a teacher. They don't know who to talk to, and they doubt whether the teachers or the school principal or whoever it happens to be is equipped with the kind of the knowledge or the skills to deal with it. How did you feel?
Oh, I felt there was no support as such. There was nothing in place for me. Like, I was pinned up against the wall, nearly choked to death. I was thrown down a flight of stairs, pushed and shoved against lockers, and, you know, verbally abused on a daily basis while I was in there. And I was afraid to say anything from the get-go, because I was a shy kid as well, and I think maybe that's why the bullying started. You know, they pick on the new kid firstly, but then because I was shy and wouldn't say anything, their 5 minutes of fame, you know, would grow and grow. But it took me a long time to actually tell anybody, and it was just out of complete fear one day I burst it out and I had a panic attack. And when I went to the principal with my parents, he basically said, well, we will get the pupils that you can pinpoint, and we will give them, you know, talking to, and we'll give them detention and whatever. And I think they were suspended for like a day, but that was nothing, you know, compared to, you know, that wasn't proper. And that took a while for it to happen. Like, the principal turned around to me and said, well, look, it's the consequences of being a first year student. This whole first year beating was a whole trend for back when I started school, and still is in some places that I've learned recently. And I just find that shocking.
And I mean, it must have had an impact on you, Chris, afterwards. I doubt the kind of the experience or the trauma of it ended as soon as you told the principal, did it?
Well, I didn't go back to school. My parents pulled me out of school. They didn't want me going back to that particular school. And we did try other schools, but the damage was so far done. Like, I was losing sleep at night. I wasn't able to eat. I couldn't focus on my studies. So a lot of this was starting to show, but I was trying to hide it as much as I could in the process. So when the teachers were there, they just said, well, we've done what we could. There's nothing else we can do. And that's tragic. Like, and then it was down to me to try and go back into school. And I wanted to go back to school. I was starting to meet new friends and be part of their group and find my own feet. I was 13 years old. And you know, because of being tossed aside, so to speak, I was on the brink of committing suicide because of it, because I just thought, well, there's no way I can go forward. I have no leaving cert, no junior cert. Mm. And I just thought, well, how am I going to progress in life? Because I was told you need all these things, and rightly so. But like, if I'm not given the opportunity to try and get help to go back to where I should have been before the bullying started, it's a long, long road. Like, it took me 4 years to recover from just that trauma alone. And I still, you know, have bouts of like anxiety and stuff like that today, but I can manage it better as an adult. Like,
what would you like to see Norma Foley do about this?
Well, the good action plan that's been put into place is a good start, though I feel like we're a bit behind. I feel like this should have been done 10 years ago. I like the avenue of she introduces that, you know, the students have more of a say. This is all well and good, but what needs to happen, Ciarán, is they need to put in someone that's in every school, like an anti-bullying officer of some sort that communicates with all the teachers, so the teacher can say, well, to this officer, this person is falling behind. I fear there's something wrong, and try and pick up on the issues of bullying and try and put in a talk to teacher comment box in every classroom where it's anonymous, and at least then the teacher can call it out. And then maybe address it in like an assembly or something and say, well, look, if this person wouldn't mind coming to us, you know, privately, we'll talk it out and see what we can do. That would go a million miles better, you know, because this is the other thing. I do school talks, Ciarán, right? And a lot of the schools have stuff in place for, you know, anti-bullying awareness. They have well-being weeks. And this is brilliant to those schools that do that. But some schools in some areas, they have nothing. And I had a pupil reach out to me recently from a school begging me to see would I get in touch with the school and would I do a school talk and highlight the bullying awareness in general and tell my story. And like this young student came to me and I just couldn't believe it. You know, I'm used to teachers getting in contact with me and stuff like that, principals. And I welcome the chance to go and tell my story because this is what needs to be done as well. More awareness on the subject, because the schools need to follow up continuously. And this is where an officer would come and play and get the ball rolling, where these procedures can be put in and followed up on.
Well, we'll put that exact issue to the minister in about 45 minutes time when she is with me here on the show, that issue of an officer. I mentioned Sean Fallon, who's with us as well. Sean, where do you think the greatest shortcoming is in terms of dealing with this in schools and in the classroom?
Well, I suppose there's a few areas in particular that I have in my mind, but certainly I have sympathy for Chris in what he had to go through. It was unnecessary, but probably inevitable at the time. Part of his reluctance, Chris, part of your reluctance to report it was likely to be, and this is well researched all over the place around Europe, a fear of making matters worse, because you wouldn't feel, I imagine, that the handling of it by the adults would be sufficient to keep you out of trouble or that it would never happen again. There is research about that. But getting to, you mentioned also just, Ciarán, you were saying to Chris about, you know, now or afterwards, and was it over? It doesn't be over. The damage can be lifelong. It can be economic damage, because a child who falls back at school, their CAO points ultimately won't be as good, their career options won't be as good, etc. Socially and in regard to friends and relationships, that can be damaged forever by people who are then, or because people are then, you know, they're nervous to make friends and can they rely on friendship after their experience. Mm. And then their self-confidence can take a terrible hit. And the figures for self-harming and indeed for suicide are not getting better, they're getting worse. And in the 10 years since the anti-bullying procedures were made mandatory for schools all over Ireland, for all schools,
yeah,
in that length of time, bullying has got more rather than less. So I have two particular things in mind. One is, and Chris mentioned it and he's right, about feeling whether the teachers might be competent. It's actually shocking to realise that up until now there has been zero training, not 1 hour of training for teachers as trainee teachers in a four-year course, not 1 hour spent teaching them how to deal with bullying situations. They're taught about bullying so that they'll tell kids about bullying in SPHE, but they're not taught how, as adults in an organisation, they can identify it, they can deal with it, and they can fix it. And this is all so doable, but they don't, it's not there. And one of the recommendations, incidentally, of the Joint Committee report in 2023 on this was that such training should be included both in initial teacher training for new teachers and in continuous professional development for existing teachers, for all teachers. So I'm hoping that this new report that you say is out, and I haven't seen it, I hope it will embrace all that. And the other one thing,
yeah,
well, it's a two-pronged thing, the awareness raising, and Chris mentioned this as well, and he goes in and does talks and he raises awareness. There is a way of raising awareness on a continuous basis in a school without rocking the boat or causing other things to become more complicated. And it can be done through a very straightforward program. And I'm involved with one, as you probably know.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to blow any trumpet. But the awareness raising is so easily doable and it dovetails with everything else in the school. And the other thing is a way to uncover the hidden bullying. Chris shouldn't have had to report it. Chris was intimidated. Chris couldn't bring that to the surface. But there should be, and there is, a mechanism available free to actually get that information to the teachers and equip the teachers to deal with it. That's all there. So I hope to God that the minister in this new thing will make this mandatory for schools.
Okay, we will put some of these issues to the minister when she's with me. Lots of people getting in touch. Hi, Kieran. Why is there never any emphasis on the bully and how parents can prevent or recognise their child as a bully, which is an interesting point. Somebody else says, how did the rest of us in the 70s and 80s survive childhood? We got through things and now we're as tough as nuts compared to the modern day snowflakes. Imagine listening to an interview with somebody on national radio who talked about feeling suicidal. That was the scale of the bullying, and texting in that they're snowflakes and people should just put up with it. Anyway, sometimes it just beggars belief. Now, we also talked earlier today about bullying in schools. So a new report from the Department of Education, commissioned by the Minister for Education, has revealed a number of things. Amongst them, that about a third of post-primary school students say that they do not feel like they belong in school. There are 400,000 post-primary school students in the country. That's about 130,000 plus feel that way. An absolutely huge number. I am joined on the line to discuss by the Minister for Education, Norma Foley. Minister, I'm sure like many, you would have been caught out by that figure, 130,000 plus. It's massive.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Kieran, just in the first instance today, I actually commissioned this report. I think for too long, we haven't really been open enough to discuss issues like bullying in school. I want to say that, look, the inspectorate's report does very clearly say that the vast majority of students are very happy and contented in school. But we've always known that there's a percentage of students, there are some students who don't feel happy or included or contented in school. And I've always known myself, look, I come from a teaching background, that every parent that sends a child into school, their greatest hope is that child will succeed and exceed expectations in school. But I also know in my heart that their greatest, greatest fear is that their child will be bullied in school. And so I think it was very important that we have a base, you know, that we have a knowledge now. And this was a very significant body of work done by the inspectorate. More than 4,600 people engaged with it, more than 2,000 children in particular. And so the report does point to very good practice in many instances, but really where we need to do more and more. And I also want to say, as that report was launched today, then I also launched a report which is on the updated procedures, if you like, to prevent and address bullying in our schools. So it's very important that we look at both hand in hand. And so almost all of the points that have been made by the inspectorate and the calls that they're making, we're addressing them now on the new procedures that are issuing to schools. So, for example, they very much so said that the student voice needs to be heard. And I was really pleased about that, because since I've become minister, we have already some of that in train in terms of having a student participation unit that, you know, any policy we deliver in education now, students must be part of, you know, the discussion or engagement or debate, and indeed even the work that was done here with the inspectorate, students were key to it. So many of the things that they have called for, we're putting in place. The first thing they've asked for is that there would be a whole school initiative or plan put in place in terms of anti-bullying measures in the schools, and everybody needs to be consulted so that everybody owns it. That's parents and students and staff and board of management, everybody. So that's one of the criteria now that we have in our procedures in school. The second thing we're asking is that policy will be reviewed year on year. As a department, we're also introducing a mechanism where all incidences of bullying in school must be reported to the Board of Management, and equally so, for the first time in the history of the state, all instances of bullying must be uploaded and reported to the inspectorate. Now, they will be anonymised, but I firmly believe that if we are to tackle the issues, we need to know what the issues are. So this database will allow us to have a better understanding of the type of bullying that occurs, why it occurs, when it occurs, and then solution focus to ensure that that doesn't happen going forward.
And that works when the bullying's reported. One of the findings of the report as well is that clear reticence is how it's described among some students to report bullying. And the report actually answers its own question, why might that be the case? There's a lack of confidence in teachers' ability to identify the signs of bullying. This and it's interesting, the report also talks about, you know, principals and teachers almost unanimous in their perception that children and young people can talk to an adult. You know, the teachers seem to be of one mind, but the students seem to have an awful lot less confidence.
Yeah, no, and I hear that, and I think that was a valid point being made there. But I think equally so, I could say that in the report by the inspectors, it pointed to the fact that almost without exception, the students were able to point to one good adult within the system that they felt that they could speak to. Equally so, that particularly at primary school, they identified and were very clear that, you know, anti-bullying measures were a very clear part of policy, the mechanisms that were in place. But they did point, and you're right, they did point to, for many students, a reticence to report. And so therefore, as part of the new procedures that we're bringing in now into the schools, there is a policy of see more and speak more. In other words, tell what's happening. And when you tell what's happening, then we will be able to support you. And so, for example, and this came from students themselves, the policy that will be formulated and agreed by the schools and by everybody within the school, that policy must now be given a central platform within the school building, almost as you enter the school. And it has to be in child or student-friendly language. That's number one. And the students themselves said that that policy should also be included in the student journal so that every child and every parent knows what the procedure is, who you speak to, and what will happen next. So that clarity of purpose. And again, I'm very pleased to think that actually came from the students themselves.
And the who you speak to part, I mean, we spoke to somebody earlier in the programme, a gentleman who kind of campaigns in this area, and he's a big believer in there being a bullying officer in a school, be that a teacher or somebody with just that sole focus on their agenda. I mean, is there something in that, that there is a point person, maybe not for the entire school, maybe for each year?
Yeah, well, we schools do have pastoral care teams. Schools do have well-being teams. And generally, the procedure is that a student is perhaps more comfortable speaking with and engaging with someone that they know best. So generally, that will be their class teacher. Or if they're not comfortable with doing that, that will be then their year head.
Does that explain some of the divergence between primary and post-primary? That in primary school, right, they're younger, so they probably make more of an emotional connection with the teacher, but also their teacher is their teacher in the classroom all day, every day. And you've got this rotating cast of characters in secondary school. Now, I'm not about to ask you, should we completely upend the secondary school system? But I just wonder, is that part of the reticence to speak to the teacher is that they see their each teacher less often? There's less of a connection at secondary school.
Well, I think there may well be something in that, but I do think as well that we work very hard in the post-primary sector that there are identifiable people within the school. So people do know who the school counsellor is. People do have, students do have a class teacher. This is a teacher who engages with them either on a daily basis or two or three times in the week, whatever, however that is timetabled. But they do have a designated person, and they certainly have a year head who engages with them at various times for, you know, whether it's assemblies or whatever the case might be. They do have a defined and identifiable, I suppose, personnel there. But there is a reluctance. I think the reluctance is there's more of an openness with younger children to discuss and to declare and to share. There's less of an openness to do that at post-primary. And that's why we are working really, really hard on foot of what the inspectorate has said and on foot of the procedures that I've launched today, that there will be a whole school buy-in to this anti-bullying preventative measures. In other words, we're all invested in this. We all have a part to play here so that, you know, number one, all of us together will write up the policy, as it were. Number two, we will be part of the review of the policy year on year. And number three, we will be part of, I suppose, the solution when an issue arises. So it's a whole school positive atmosphere. And I think it's really, really positive to say that we're having a discussion like this today, Kieran. I think for too long, we have been reticent and we have been reluctant to have the conversation. I believe you can't solve anything unless you meet it head on. So I think today, irrespective of, I suppose, some of the points that we might not be happy with, it's a good step forward to be open and to declare there are issues and to say good practice happens every single day in schools, but there are areas where we need to do more and do better. And today is a step in that direction.
If you want to read more detail from the report, there's coverage on Newstalk's website or indeed on the department's website as well. You can get full access to the report. Minister, just in terms of your own bailiwick as well, we spoke to Sophie Cole on the show a few weeks ago, an SNA who has been out of work, hasn't been working out of the classroom since November 2022 after being assaulted by a student. And without getting into the detail again of her experience, and people can listen back to the podcast if they want, she had kind of a number of requests of you and the Department of Education: provide immediate financial assistance to cover medical related expenses, provide assault leave to teachers and SNAs for the duration of their medically certified leave, not just 6 months, and establish a comprehensive support system for educators who are victims of violence within the workplace. What's your response?
Well, look, I can't comment on an individual case, but in the first instance, I would want to say I would sympathise with anyone who has an experience like that and experiences assault during the course of their work, whether, you know, whatever that environment might be. And currently, there is a very clear procedure. You know, there is within the education sector, there is a 3 month leave, and then subject to further medical advice and medical support, there is a further 3 months. So that's 6 months of leave. And after that, then it becomes a matter of sick leave. Now, I will say that current practice is being reviewed. I know the union have, FORSA have been very clear in their request that would be reviewed on the whole. So it is currently being reviewed, okay. And there may be opportunities to do things differently going forward, but currently it is a 6 month leave.
Yeah, which means kind of in April last year it would have expired, the 6 months for her, and it would for anyone in her situation. And I appreciate you don't want to comment on specific cases, but as you said, that there is scope in the near future possibly for that to become a longer period of entitlement.
Well, we are reviewing the entirety of that process. I will certainly say that. You know, look, I want to acknowledge as well that, look, that's regarded as a considerable time period as well. But I also recognise that, you know, individual cases can be different and there can be a unique aspect to everything. So we are happy to do that review.
Listen, before you go, really, really busy day on the political spectrum. We were speaking to some of those hoping to be Green Party leader. Of course, the Migration Pact as well, making its way through Dáil ratification today. Your party colleague, Willie O'Dea, thinks the issue should be put to the people. We should have a referendum on the Migration Pact. Do you agree with them?
Well, I think, look, there has been a very full, yesterday, again today, and indeed it's been ongoing now, the discussion and the review and the debate around the Migration Pact. I think it's been very fulsome. I think it's been considerable hours have been given to it. I think it's time that we make a decision. I think people are very cognizant of the efforts that are being made in terms of speeding up applications, of ensuring that those who are deserving of a right to be here receive that right, but those who are not deserving of that right, they are turned around as quickly and as timely a fashion as possible. So this is what the Migration Pact is talking about. It's ensuring that we have a collaborative approach right across Europe. Difficult to do things on your own, but as part of the collaborative, we'll be able to do things more expediently. We'll be able to move things more quickly. There's ample opportunity for the public representatives who were voted in by the electorate to discuss it, to analyse it, to debate it. And then ultimately, I think we need to make the decision and move on.
Minister for Education, Norma Foley. Minister, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.